Welcome to Manager Tools. When not to use email. Part two. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What should I not use email for? Why do some of my emails not work? How can I avoid conflicts using email? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. We are in the second part of our conversation about when not to use email. And there's a number of them. And last time we talked about urgent matters, right? That's not if it's urgent, probably a phone call or better face-to-face would make a lot more sense. And delivering of bad news. And
The
typical, the story is, you know, people getting fired by text or getting fired by email, that kind of stuff. So we're not going to do that. But there's more. This one is a little different, but it's not about avoiding something bad. It's sending email limits the effectiveness of the communication, which is around strong relationship creation. And if you want to have a strong relationship with somebody or create a new relationship, email's probably not the way to start.
Yeah, it's a common mistake, particularly that people who are in the workforce who have always had access to email make, and that is the idea that because email is my go-to communication medium, and because I want to create relationships, everybody does to some degree, I should therefore use email to do it. But you have to remember, email makes things easier for you. It's not about the recipient. It's not about effectiveness. It's not about completeness of transmission. So while you might first meet someone, if you will, through email, it's highly unlikely you're going to create a strong relationship with someone solely through email. And if you're thinking right now, well, Mark, you're wrong. I actually did that. Remember, just a couple of things. One, it's possible, but it's not likely. And the problem that it creates is your belief that it can be done anytime. It's quite rare, even with people who naturally prefer email, like high C's for those of you who are disc aficionados. Email alone will not serve the nature of most human relationships. As hard as relationships are to create and maintain and sustain, if you're trying to use the worst medium in terms of reasonableness, it just gets really, really hard. It makes no sense to make one of the two foundational pieces of an effective career, results and relationships, reliant upon the weakest of our methods that we have in terms of communication. You know, it's like trying to conduct a presentation by email, or lead a team only through Facebook, or walking 10 miles to work every day when you have a car, or playing golf with only one club in your bag when you're allowed to have 14. It doesn't make any sense. It's easy for you, and you might actually say to yourself, gosh, you know, I actually have a couple of relationships, Mark, that are really, really good, and they're all email. I would argue, A, they're probably not all email. You met at some point. Or B, they're sustaining because you met, you worked together, you knew them well, and now you're simply sustaining a great relationship, which you can largely through email, which you can do. But to take a relationship past the acquaintance stage really requires, this is going to sound very geeky to people, it really requires moving upwards on the media quality scale.
The media quality scale. Okay, you're right. You're right. It does sound geeky.
Yeah. I mean, look, rather than going to email first, and the kiss of death with email is everyone knows it's easiest, and I would argue certainly text messaging is in that category as well. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, feel free to email us folks, that...
Not us.
That, yeah, exactly. Email, Mark. Yeah, the address is... Michael Ozan. I assume that Snapchat is not a professionally sanctioned regular way that people are conducting business with one another. I'm sure there's someone who would argue it should be. And I would say it's just the further degradation of relationship building and effective communication by focusing on what's easiest or cutest or funniest, for that matter, for the sender, not for the receiver. And look, if you are most comfortable in email, that's fine. We respect that. as long as you're aware of the degradation of your career effectiveness due to less relationships and less trusting relationships, it's simply what it boils down to. Heck, for the I's and S's of the world, if you think you can have a great relationship just through email, I promise you they don't judge the relationship the way you do. And just being able to get things done across email because somebody's far away from you does not mean you have a great relationship. A great relationship means when you ask them something, they'll do it for you, no matter what. And I can't imagine if you've never met a person in person that they're going to say, oh, yeah, I know him. I like him. I'm going to do it.
Right. Well, example, this is if you're debating whether or not this, what Mark says, makes sense. And again, if it doesn't make sense, feel free to mail him. think about proposing to somebody over email, right? Well, I'm sure there's somebody here who would say that's okay. But the vast majority of people say, well, yeah, I'd never do that. Well, okay. So that's an extreme example of a communication around a relationship that's important. That still applies at some level to most relationship building.
Yeah, that's a good generic test of any choice we make relative to, in this case, a communication medium, but almost any choice where you are given a series of choices from one end of a spectrum to another. If I can create a use case, which you would then say, yeah, email doesn't work for that, then immediately you're implying that email or any other medium or any other choice on a continuum has a limit. There are things that it ought not to be used for. If you can do that, then you ought to say, okay, what does that mean for other situations? Because essentially, you've just proven that there are times when it won't be used. So now we work backwards from proposing by email and ask ourselves, at what point does email start becoming useful, or when is it not useful? How far can we go considering it not useful?
Right. I haven't thought through this clearly, so I'll probably ask Paul, our fantastic audio engineer, to cut it out, but I'll say it anyways. I kind of think of this email and forms of communication on the appropriate form of communication is based upon where the conversation sits on a scale. And at the in my head, on the left side is communication purely around facts. I'm communicating information and facts, right? And then on the right-hand side of the scale is emotional content. And I can have a conversation that is devoid of any need for emotional or empathetic communication. And on the far right side, it's the whole point, right? Now, it's probably a fact. I was just use the example of a proposal. There's probably the single fact there is I love you and I want to marry you. So there's actually two facts. But the vast majority of the communication is emotional, right? I want to spend the rest of my life with you, the depth of your love, etc. On the far left side, if I'm communicating the status of a project, it's just a function of facts. This is where we are. This is the date is happening. Here are the issues, blah, blah, blah. And my choice of communication is one thinking about where does this conversation sit on that scale? And then what is the most appropriate form of communication given where it sits on the scale? And one on the far left, email's fine, right? On the far right, absolutely not. And now you're talking face-to-face. Somewhere in the middle, it might be, you know, over the phone, voice communication. That's kind of what's in my head.
Yeah, and I think even if you want to take that apart a little bit and disagree with Mike, the fundamental distinction is we're making choices about the medium we're using rather than simply defaulting to email and shoving everything in email because email's easiest. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, and for every communication I have throughout the day, I'll say 200 of them, I have a little spreadsheet and I sit down and I figure out and I weight the various factors. And then at the bottom of my spreadsheet, it says, you know, call them up or send a voicemail or, you know, write a note. That's just, yeah, it's just the way I roll. That's me.
Yeah. I love you, man. So next one on the list is follow up. And surely for everybody, this one is the easiest. If you've already sent one email and you didn't get what you were expecting, why would you do the same thing again? It's the old lesson, learning again. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Here's the way I feel about this. And this may be a rookie mistake, but it happens often enough. And maybe it's just in my reticular activating system that I'm aware of it. And so it strikes me. But imagine it like this. You're having to explain your role in a failed process a project, an outcome, an experience, a mistake you made, why you did what you did, what you did, and so on. And your boss is trying to do a hot wash, but it's basically a roll-powered Who Shot John. And she asks you, okay, so you sent the first email and you didn't hear for a week. The deadline's right around the corner. What was the next thing you did? If you say, I sent another email, ask yourself, how do you think that'll go? Or how would it go if roles reversed? One of your directs said that to you. I mean, it's easy. You can never follow up an email request with a repeated email request. It doesn't work. You're essentially saying this is no more important and you can't make an email more. You can't send an urgent email. We already decided that. You can't really truly communicate emotions. You know, that's part of the weakness of the medium. So you escalate when you're repeating and following up. You escalate by elevating your medium. Phone or FaceTime or text or face-to-face or note on their desk or note to their peer, or note to their boss, whatever. You can never send a second email about the same thing. Hey, where is that thing? Hey, I haven't heard from you. Where is that thing? It just completely belies that this is important. You're basically saying, I'm going to do the same easy thing I did 5, 7, 10 days ago. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay, next one. We'll try to resist going down a bunch of rabbit holes here, but...
Oh, no, we won't.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but we're not going to do that. Political documentation. What do you mean by that?
I am so astounded by this on a regular basis, and I'm tired of people blaming their organization for their behavior. In fact, you know, it just occurred to me as I'm saying that when people say, well, the reason I do things this way is that's the culture of our company, even though they've agreed that whatever they're doing is inefficient or ineffective, I think that's the equivalent of I was just following orders. I'm not responsible for my activity. I'm in an organization, and this is what they do. And so, therefore, I'm obligated to follow, even though it's wrong,
right,
or ineffective or inefficient.
Well, it's cowardice is what it is, frankly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why people, you know, in the military, for example, give the excuse, well, I was just following orders, even though they knew it was wrong, right? Because it takes a little gumption to stand up and say, no,
yeah,
I'm willing to stand up for what I believe, and I'm willing to take the consequences of my decision.
Yeah. So I hear this a lot, that we have an email culture, and you have to be able to prove what you did or didn't do. And so therefore, I do everything by email, so I have a paper trail. I can prove X or Y or Z. Now, there are the cases. It's a small percentage. I would guess it's 10 or 15% of people who talk this way. And the reason they say it is because they are simply insecure, deeply, deeply insecure, and they want proof of everything.
Well, you know, an example of this kind of stuff, I see this in my corporate career. In most cases where I have seen this in its grandest form is project management organizations. And you think about most IT organizations being high D's, high C's, not in what I meet folk, that's just talk there, meaning task focused, detail focused, but not people focused at all. And so if you're not people focused, you don't think about naturally the value of relationships. And instead, I'm going to overwhelm people with force and with facts, and I will win because I have everything documented. Unfortunately, there's at least half the organization that tends to not think that way, and they think relationship-wide. And project management organizations in technical organizations, man, this happens way more often than it should.
Yeah, that's one of many problems with project management organizations in terms of, well, you don't need to tell me about what you did. You just need to update the status sheet, right? And then project people say, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to do work? Or you want me to update my status? And of course, for the 100th time, the answer is yes. I want you to do both. It is an insult to other people that you will not take their word. Now, yeah, you might say, well, Mark, they burned me before. Okay, fair. Not everybody has burned you before, and far too many of us think that we can get away with asking everyone for documentation. Further, if you do this to someone who is relatively honest, you then have made them no longer trust you. You've basically said by your behavior, I don't trust you. So they're going to learn not to trust you in return. And you're going to make yourself more and more of an island. So if you can't tell, folks, this is a pet peeve. If someone has given you a verbal commitment, if they said, yeah, I'll do that, or okay, Tuesday, it is an insult to their integrity. And folks, it's even worse if you do it in front of others in a meeting. It is an insult to their integrity to send them an email asking to put it in writing what they've already committed to verbally. And if you go around insulting people's integrity, you're not going to get very damn far in the professional world. I mean, the example I have, I saw it happen. I'm in a meeting with a client, and two peers are in a meeting with their boss. I'm working with their boss. And one guy says, yeah, okay, I'll go ahead and do that. And the project manager guy, he wasn't really a project, but he was essentially responsible for this little thing that they're working on. He says, okay, look, I'll send you a mail to confirm that. The other guy says, you don't have to confirm it. I'll do it. He says, well, no, I need a paper trail. And now what frustrated me about this was the manager watched this all unfold. And the other guy goes, no, I'm busy. I'm not going to send you an email. You can take my word for it. He says, well, what if something goes wrong? I won't be able to prove. And he looks around. The other guy who committed to do the thing.
And the boss says, is in the room, right?
Whole time. Yes, absolutely. And the other guy looks around and says, all these people heard me. He says, well, that only works if there are other people around. And the other guy goes, well, there are other people around. And by now, I'm getting ready to just bowl over the manager and say, no wonder you need me. You're not doing your job. It's unbelievable. And so the first guy says, well, you know, that's something like, it's not cool of you, or I don't appreciate that. And the guy says, I'm not sending you a mail.
I promise you. And I don't have to send you email about that promise either.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, it was really damaging in that discussion. And my recollection is that later, someone else asked the guy who had been asking for the email, is that standard around here? Maybe it was a new team member. Maybe it was a new employee. I don't know. And the guy said, well, if you want to protect yourself, it is. Well, in a way, if you're young, if you're new, who doesn't want to protect themselves? But it is absolutely devastating to the culture of trust that teams and individuals and relationships are built on. I've said it before, one of my favorite titles of a business book, The Speed of Trust, to say, whatever you say to me is not worthy. You must put it in writing so I can prove it. In other words, it's me against everyone else. This is one of those political things that people blame on their organization. Hey, that's how this organization is. You got to have proof. This is one of those things that will absolutely destroy any chance a team has of being a team. What's more, in this case, the manager overseeing this is basically saying to her or his people, don't trust your colleagues. You have to have it in writing. And let's assume this manager was not that way. She could have easily said, look, guys, if you promise something, that's good enough for me. And if you don't promise something and you're somebody who doesn't keep promises, sooner or later that'll come out. And I have no room for people like that on my team. But I also have no room for people on my team who think that everything needs to be backed up, everything needs to be proved, everything needs to be documented, because we don't have time for that. We don't have time to create a legal paper trail to protect ourselves from one another. The whole point of trust and team is to let your guard down with each other so you can speed things up. You can trust one another. You can talk in a language that makes sense only to us, perhaps, but other people know what you mean and can get things done by it. And if you're blaming your organizational culture, you're wrong. Nothing you do is a function of your organizational culture. Okay, I'll make some exceptions. Putting your badge on in the morning, okay, in order to get to work, okay. You can blame that on the culture. I would argue that it's a black and white rule and that's not culture, but whatever. Your individual behavior with others is not a result of the culture of the organization. It is a driver of the culture of the organization. Culture is nothing more than the sum total of all of the behaviors in the organization. If you want to change the culture, change your behavior. If you don't like the culture, change your behavior. Now, there are some times when you have to do something, or you feel you have to do it, or as Mike would say, you lack the courage to behave in a way that's not in concert with your culture. That's fine. But that's not the culture's fault. You are still responsible for your behaviors. Okay. Now, if you don't like the culture that much, leave. But don't tell us it was the culture that did it. You know, the culture made me do it. If it's that bad, get a different organization. I'll tell you, I've had this happen to me with clients. Oh, so you say you're going to do X. I'll send you a mail to verify that. I said, no, don't send me a mail. I said I'd do it. I'll do it. He says, well, it'll be helpful for my boss. I'm not answering it. It's kind of funny, Mark. You know, it'd be helpful, you know. And in one case, I remember a guy saying something to the effect of, you work for me. I said, well, I'm not going to do it. There's some stuff I'm not going to do, and I'm not going to do that. Now, if I have a great relationship with somebody and somebody says, will you please put all that in writing so I could forward it to my boss because he's overseas? I got no problem with that. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not political documentation. That's making it easy for somebody else to do their job. But saying to somebody, well, no, I'll follow this up with an email in which you agree to all the things you just agreed to. That's not making anybody's job easier. Yeah. Absolute pet peeve of mine. And there are people privately who are listening who don't talk about the fact that it's politically advantageous for them to have a paper trail to prove that whomever was wrong, and it's not them. But I would argue two things. One, there are times when they themselves are wrong and they don't offer up email to prove it, which is really unethical in my opinion.
Right.
And the second thing that goes along with it is they're acting as if this is normal. And they want other people to do it in many cases. Folks, this isn't normal. It's wrong. It is an affront to decent organizational behavior. That's what this is. And it's not something you get credit for to protect yourself. Okay? That's not your job. Your job is to be effective for the organization. And part of that includes trust. Whether you're comfortable trusting or not, part of your job is trusting other people.
We can go on and on.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah, this is just a... so many stories I can tell, but one.
Yeah.
There's probably 20 or 30 or 100 other things that we could talk about in terms of where, when not to send email. And again, yeah. Folks, if you have those, Mark likes cataloging these kind of things. So if you have like 20 or 30 extra things that you would like him to talk about on a podcast, again, just feel free to send him an email.
You sound sarcastic. I love getting emails from our listeners. I mean, millions of listeners saying, you know, telling us what they need help with. So folks, do send an email to customerservice@manager-jules.com. And it'll, if it's a request for a podcast, it'll come to me. I may have to ask you some questions by email. It's not because I'm trying to keep a paper trail, but yeah, I'd love to hear. I'm always feeling like I have to be sure that our guidance is commensurate with what managers are going through. All of our guidance is timeless, not timely. So please don't ask me to do a podcast about a headline you read in the Wall Street Journal or Wired or, heaven forbid, Fast Company. But other than that, if you're facing something at work and you're struggling and you need help, I may be able to answer your question by email. But it may also be something you see as a trend. I'd love to hear it. We do have 3,000 more emails to go. So that's what I think.
Podcasting? 3,000 podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. 3,000 podcasts.
Yeah, I know.
I have email
all about email now.
And that is, if you think 50 into 3,000 is 60 more years of podcasts. So we have a long way to go.
Cool.
But I'd be happy to hear it. So summarizing, email is a great tool, guys. It's a required tool. It's a professional tool. It's exceptionally good in many cases. But it's like water. It's a requirement for your survival at work. But folks, people still die of water intoxication. And you can absolutely, and many of you already are, reducing your effectiveness by over-reliance on the easiest medium rather than the most effective medium. Don't choose efficiency when effectiveness is what you're shooting for.
Excellent. All right, my friend. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, partner.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one.